This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's this week's edition of the Terry's Talking Podcast with Terry Pluto, and I am your host, David Campbell. What's going on, Terry? How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. I have something I want to get off my chest here at the start before we got a lot to get into today. The Cavs playoffs, the Guardians are continuing to surprise. We got a little Brown salary cap stuff and some more foul ball stories, but I am tired. We have to make a Terry's Talking decree that the phrase "don't sleep on" is going to be banned from here on out. I'm so tired of hearing it between the NCAA and the NCAA playoffs. Oh, don't sleep on the Clippers. Don't sleep on this and don't sleep on that. I just want people to make a prediction and
That's
stick
correct.
To it. What do you think, right?
Yes. Say, okay, a lot of people don't like the Clippers, but I do.
Yeah, or they're going like to win a couple rounds, or they're going to make the Western Conference Finals, or but like I'm so sick of it. So anyway, starting
I guess
today,
the implication of sleeping on is that other people are not paying attention to them. Okay, fine, we'll just say that, and then therefore, when you don't say "don't sleep on this," that means you're being the best version of yourself, which is one that I have.
That's right. Yeah. When you say "don't sleep on something," all they're doing is like, oh yeah, if something happens, well, I told you don't sleep on it.
Right.
Like, just make the call. Anyway, I wanted to get that off my chest because it's been bugging me.
We could ask, by the way, since we're at it, we have two things for the list. Don't sleep on it. Best version of yourself. If people want to send us a couple of things, we'll decide whether they belong on the banned list.
All right, we'll get a banned list going. I like that.
Yeah.
And we'll call it when we see it, right? We'll be like the umpires. We'll call the strikes and balls. So, all right, Terry, a lot of sports to get to in Cleveland. Let's start with the Cavs since they're in playoff season, which is crazy to think about. They finished 48-34, fourth in the East behind the Knicks, who finished second, go figure, and the Bucks, who finished number three after being in the number two spot. I think all we know at this point is that the Cavs are playing a home game against the Orlando Magic on Saturday, the first game of that series. There's a lot at stake here, Terry, for this franchise, and you've been writing about that. Why don't you talk about kind of what's at stake here for this Cavs team?
Right. I mean, there'll be all this debate on whether they should have tried to win the Charlotte game and try to be – first of all, they weren't going to end up second because the Knicks had 50 wins, so that wasn't going to happen. My goal for actually first round of the playoffs is simply just not to face the Knicks again. I just think there's so much bad karma and luggage there. To avoid that early on would have been a good thing. So you get into whether you're playing Indiana or Orlando. I have to admit, I find it hard to say that I'd rather play one over the other. Clearly, the Cavaliers are leaning towards Orlando. The point is, as I wrote a column, you just got to win this. I don't want to hear about seeding. I don't want to hear about injuries. I don't want to hear about whatever you want to say. I don't want to hear about sleeping on anybody. Wake up, win the first round, be the best version of yourself and any other cliches, because it's do or die, now or never. Well, actually, in some respects, though, in terms of this version of the Cavs, if it's not the best version of itself, I mean, a lot can come down. You know, what's going to happen there. But I was very pleased to see how they played Friday night against Indiana. I thought that was extremely encouraging. Mitchell looked about as close to himself as he has for a while. Jared Allen continues to be a major force. I really think that we'll see how it goes in the playoffs. But, you know, where Jared took a lot of heat, and even some people wanted to trade him because he sat after in the middle of the Knicks series or right after. You know, the lights were too bright for us at times. Maybe that was a thing, a kind of self-revelation to himself that, you know, I wasn't ready for that. And because he has come back, and especially, David, in times when Mobley was out or just the team was undermanned, you know, Mitchell and Allen carried them. And then other guys fell into line, Strus and Niang and Okoro, several others. So I'm fascinated to see how Allen will play in this series.
I am sitting here racking my brain the last couple of days trying to think of one reason that the Cavs should not win this playoff series against the Orlando Magic, and I can't come up with anything. I mean, they're more experienced, the Cavs are. They have more talent, and they have the best player on the court, right, in Donovan Mitchell. So there's no reason that they shouldn't win this series. Am I right?
Well, Banchero's really good, but Mitchell's better. When the regular lineup that Orlando was starting down the stretch, the only player who had even any playoff experience whatsoever was Gary Harris, who's just kind of a role player. They have a guy named Joe Ingles coming off the bench, and they got a couple other guys. But the Cavs are loaded with playoff players. Mobley and Garland have been through the playoff tournament, the play-in tournament, excuse me, and the regular playoffs. LeVert has 14 playoff games. So does Jared Allen. Mitchell has 44. Then you start getting the guys like Strus and Niang. They have like in the high 40s. Marcus Morris and Tristan Thompson have more than 50. So they will be rolling a lineup out there. Let's just suppose they go with their regular lineup of Mitchell and Garland and Mobley and Allen and Strus. Those guys have all been in the playoffs more than once. So you're correct on that. They've got better talent, more experience. I also think Orlando right now is kind of where the Cavs were a year ago. If you look at Jamal Mobley, a former Cavs assistant, took over. He won 22 games his first year. He won 30-some his second year. And then this year, I believe they won, 46 or 47. But it's kind of like when the Cavs went from 22 to 44 to 50, you know, the first 3 years. So they're kind of a year behind the Cavs, and they're there. That way you would think that another reason it should play in their direction.
Just some more numbers on the Magic, Terry. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2020. They rank 22nd in offensive rating this season and 3rd in defensive rating and 14th in net rating.
Also, David, 5th youngest roster in the NBA.
Yes. And the Cavs have been in that position before. Yep.
Yeah, and the Cavs now are the 11th oldest.
With all the guys they brought in. So here's what I want to see, Terry. This is what I want to see from the Cavs in this series. I would like to see some hard fouls. Mm-hmm. that tells me that they have the right mindset. And I think you mentioned some of the guys, Thompson and Morris, and even to a lesser, you know, Max Strus isn't going to be clotheslining anybody coming down the lane. But they know. Yeah, but they know, like, the lane is a sacred place in the playoffs. And if you're going to go in there, you're going to pay the price. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to get fouled hard. And we didn't see hardly any of that from the Cavs last year against the Knicks. And if I see some hard fouls, especially early in the series, it's going to give me a sign that this team gets it and they know what's in store. That's what I want to see. What do you want to see from this team, especially early in the series, Terry?
Along those lines, what New York was masterful at was going over your back for rebounds and seeing if the officials would call it. And a lot of times they don't. And that frustrates the team where you think, I got him blocked out, but he's just going over my back and getting the rebounds. Well, first of all, block out better. Secondly, when you're blocked out, give it a try. See if they'll call it. Because a lot of times they don't. And that is a thing. Another thing, and I can't underline this enough, the guards must get in there and rebound. That's Garland. That's, you know, when Merrill's out there, hopefully he'll be healthy and ready to go. Well, Strus is a guard forward. Strus has been playing the total game. Didn't he? I think he had a triple-double or something against Charlotte in the last game. He says, I showed up. I don't know the rest of the guys. But now you see why last year, I forgot what series it was. It might have been the Eastern Conference Finals where Strus had a really rough time. And they kept him on the floor for 30-some minutes anyway. And I believe it's because of all the other things that he does. So, Niang will go in there and rack and get in there with some people. So I'm really encouraged. I'm not saying they're going to sweep them or anything like that, because Orlando's got talent, and they can, even though they didn't rank that high offensively, when you talk about their defense being as good as they are and athletic and they are long, you got to be ready to play. But I think also you can knock them around.
Yeah, and I think they got to start knocking around from the opening tip, Terry. I mean, we saw Mo Wagner. They're young, but they're not going to be pushed around.
No.
And if the Cavs think, oh, good, we're not playing the Knicks, this is going to be a lot less physical, I think they're going to be in for a big surprise, because Wagner especially sets a lot of the physical tone for that team, and he knows what the deal is. Like, that's just the way he plays, and they've got to bring it right away.
One of those guys who played European ball do have that feeling about that. And then also I believe they're third defensively, correct, David?
Yep.
You got to respect that. They mean they're, because a lot of times you get a young team like Indiana, for example, they love to score, they're running all over, they don't defend anybody. Well, these guys will. Banchero, I think this will be an eye-opener for Cavs fans to watch him in a series, how gifted he is. And he has something you don't see that often from people. It's a really nice mid-range game. Analytics hate it. Too bad.
Yeah, and the Magic were kind of in the same boat as the Cavs. They didn't get a lot of national airtime this year. Yep. But I think Chris Fedor had this in his story maybe today. But Banchero's the youngest player in NBA history to lead his team in scoring, rebounding, and assists in a single season. Mm-hmm. He's 21.
Yeah,
youngest player in NBA history. So this guy is a special talent, and I think Cavs fans who maybe haven't seen a lot of him, they're going to be pretty impressed with what they see.
And you mentioned Wagner. Suggs, a guy that I liked in the draft, has started to come around for them as a point guard. Of course, I was foolish enough to write that I would have taken Suggs over Evan Mobley. That would not have – it's another thing that would have got me fired as a general manager. I don't know how many other writers, like to drag up their bad draft picks from there. And I did
We've
like
all been
Mobley.
There, We've all been
I
did, there.
At that point, I was just really kind of enamored with him. And he may end up being, pretty good too. So we'll see. But he had some trouble early on. But his third year, he's come around. And they're a good team. Their GM is Jeff Weltman, son of Harry Weltman. Maybe some of the veteran fans remember Harry. Was a GM here in the early 80s, hired right at the end of the Stepien regime, and then did put together that team at World Be Free and a couple others that hired George Karl, where they made the playoffs in 1985. And he also drafted Mel Turpin and Keith Lee. So, the story on that. Uh-oh, Harry Weltman story time coming. They are looking at the draft, and they fall in love with Karl Malone. They bring him in with some members of his family, Malone, and they are taken with him. They're ready to take him. And then just at the end, almost to kind of teams bring in players to make other teams think you're going to take them, Keith Lee they bring in from Memphis State, who they were not enamored with. They fall in love with Keith Lee at the last moment, and that's who they took instead of Karl Malone.
I think Keith Lee might have led the nation in rebounding his last year in college.
Yeah,
and that might have made the difference in terms of what
they were
looking for.
Well, they thought he was more skilled as a basketball player. But what Keith Lee had was broken glass for knees. So a lot of times they say, he wasn't motivated or whatever, but he wasn't. He had terrible knees, and they should have known that. But that's one of the – there are a lot of these different decisions where, a franchise – Harry Weltman might have lost his job right there.
Yeah, one decision. Can you imagine him playing with like?
Then he would have been there. Then all of a sudden, he's out there with Price and Doherty and the rest of those guys.
Stop it! Incredible. One decision. So, yeah. All right, Terry. So, I didn't want to mention there's two Wagners on the Magic. Franz is averaging 19.7, Mo's 10.9. We mentioned a lot of the other guys, but so there's kind of a little break here while the play-in tournament happens. The Cavs have kind of 5 days to rest a little bit, start working on the Magic scouting. I think this is a good time for us. Like, what do you think is success in terms of two rounds in the playoffs? Or before we get into this thing, what do you think is a success to you right now as you look at the playoff road ahead?
Really strong first round, you know, even if it takes them six games or whatever, but just for the teams looking good and playing well. Then, all right, you go to the second round, and right now I guess it'd probably be Boston. That's a tough challenge, but how do you play them? I mean, do you lose in five like they did to the Knicks? Or do you take them to seven and it's a drag out thing? So that's a lot of it. You just have to watch. And that's one of the things where I have to admit, I always kind of hate the hypothetical of, well, if they don't do this, you know, it's like, well, how are you losing? And what happened during the series? And I mean, suppose they get to the second round, Mitchell goes down again, somebody else goes down again, but they lose in six tough games. Okay. Then, you know, we don't
have equation changes. Yeah.
You don't have, then you say, okay, do you really want to get a different coach besides JB or something? So that's why I'm always kind of reluctant. But with Orlando, you know, barring four guys being abducted by aliens and taken to another planet, they should, and that's not to disrespect Orlando, but the Cavs are ready for this. They are farther along the road.
And you want to make a prediction for the series, or do you want to?
Cavs in six. Why not?
I am right there with you, Terry. I think they should win it in five or six if they're going
to
win it.
And it's pretty hard to win in five. You can do it, but it's hard because things happen over the course, you know, when they play these seven-game series. And the nice thing is they do have the seventh game at home if they need be. I believe last time I looked, it was something like 71% of the teams that have a seventh game at home win. And that kind of makes some sense now it is the home crowd, because generally if you have the seventh game at home, that means you have had a better regular season. So you are the better team going in.
All right, Cavs in six. Well, before we move on to the Guardians, Terry, I did want to give a special 2 minutes here. George Niang.
Yes.
30 years old. I don't know if you saw this, but he played in all 82 games for the Cavs this season.
I even wrote that just before it happened.
All right. So a little trivia question for our listeners. He's the fifth player to do so for the Cavs over the last 15 seasons. You probably know this, but I don't. So there are four other players. Nobody's done it since 2018-19, but there's five guys.
Oh, I know.
George Niang is one, and there's four others in the last 15 years.
Okoro did it. Tristan did it. Did Okoro do it?
Okoro did not, but Tristan did. He did it four times, played all 82
games.
Yeah,
he had that incredible streak. Okoro didn't, huh? That shows what I know. Okay, what else?
All right, Colin Sexton did it in 2018-19, which
I forgot. Boy, he could have won a lot of money off of me on that one.
Yeah, LeBron in 2017-18.
Yeah, that was a fascinating year. LeBron, he knows it's his last season. And he also knows that Trey Kyrie, the team is not as good. So he makes a conscious decision. How am I going to go out? Where he easily could have done my knee is sore or whatever, you know, play 70 games. So the only time in Cleveland he plays all 82, at least the second version of him, was that year. And the one we'll always remember is 2016. They're down from 3-1, come back and win. But I thought the 2 years that LeBron carried the team to the finals were the first year in 2014 and 15. That was a year everybody – remember, Delly's out there starting, and I forget everybody else because Irving got hurt, some others got hurt.
Kevin Love, yep.
Kevin Love. So, and then – it was 2018 when it's he and Kevin Love and Larry Nance Jr. I think they had Jordan Clarkson, just a bunch of guys. And they went I think they won two of the series in seven games. I know they beat Indiana in seven games, and I think they beat Boston in seven. But we'll have to be. Point is, they're all grueling series. J.R. Smith was on that. Of course, I believe that was the opening game in Boston where J.R. lost track of the score and on a rebound. I forgot all the details. So those were marvelous things. But that last year, he plays all 82 and just drags them into the finals. You know, they get wiped out. But I always thought those two, in my mind, when I think of the magnificent LeBron with the that toughness and grit that has carried him to, you know, all the points he scored playing at such a high level as he approached 40, that was the guy. That guy, by the way, was not with the Cavs the first go around. He had to develop that over time.
And the amount of conditioning and preparation that goes into keeping that body operating. And, you know, he set more records this year for somebody being as old. I don't have it in front of me, but it was some kind of record for the oldest guy to average the points and rebounds and assists that he did. I think nobody's ever done that at his age. But anyway, I wanted to mention the last guy, Terry, Alonzo G in 2012-13 played in all 82 games. So that's the five guys.
Sexton,
LeBron, Thompson, G, and now George Niang, all 82 games. And in an era where guys are getting hurt so often, and man, Donovan Mitchell can't even be considered for all NBA because of the time he missed. Yeah, it's something to play all 82.
And then you go back to the 70s where none of those guys, not Austin always, Austin Curry's battled injuries, but none of those other guys did. You know, I remember Mark Price always had a lot of different injuries, hip pointers and knee things and stuff. But, well, there you go.
Yeah, it's a good list. So, all right, so that all starts on Saturday, and Terry's prediction is Cavs in six. I will go with that as well. So, let's go to the Guardians, Terry. 11-5, they're a game up on the Royals, and I got to mention this before we start here. But so they play the Yankees yesterday, have that emotional win, get on a plane, go to Boston Sunday night. Boston is already at home. They played at home this weekend at Fenway Park. The Guardians show up, go out there today. It's Patriots Day. Rob Gronkowski throws out the first pitch and spikes it into the ground like he's spiking a football. Everybody's all jacked up. It's the Boston Marathon, and the Guardians go out there and run all over them and win 6-0 on a tough back-to-back like that. That was pretty impressive, right?
Yeah, it was. You know, Curry gave them five innings, and that probably felt like it came out of nowhere because whatever this viral thing that he and Ben Lively got in spring training, they lost like 15 pounds and were sequestered. And I don't know what exactly it was, but they were really ill. But I will say, I got a couple emails about this, but Dave, they played a day game in Cleveland. Yes, it's extra innings. And they didn't go by wagon train. They went by charter. They went by charter plane. I mean, I recall a couple of Patriots games. It just seemed to me where, I don't know whether there was a double set, something like getting in really late there. And also just in general, sometimes when you would cover baseball, you'd fly out after an evening game, get at 3 a.m, and then you're playing at 1 p.m. So these things happen. The nice thing is, David, they're playing excellent baseball. If you look at how defensively they're playing, you know, the double plays they're pulling. The difference in that Yankee game was the Yankees had a couple chances to pull double plays and make plays on ground balls. They didn't make them. And the Guardians made just a couple of super ones. And overall, this is – all right, one thing we could say definitely about Stephen Vogt is he ran a good training camp. These guys are ready to go. I mean, they are set. They're good on the bases. Yeah, I know – Naylor got picked off third in one game, and there's been maybe one, a couple other things, but you're not sitting there going, what are they doing? You go, oh, that's really good. Now, defensively, you know, the outfield play has been good. And I did think that when Class A was pitching, did you see that ball hit to right field that went over his head for a double? I think it was Laureano was out there or somebody. And I think, no, it was Brennan, I believe. It just seemed like he didn't run a good route on it. I mean, the ball was smoked, but it looked like it could have been caught. And that's one that you don't see a lot of. There aren't too many balls. The reason I mention that is it's one of the few times this year where I'm going, Well, you know, I know the ball's hit hard, but the guy didn't take a very good route. That should have been caught.
The thing I'm noticing, Terry, you're talking about the little things. You watch this team play, and I mean, even today, the Red Sox were throwing the ball around the infield. I think it's still rolling.
Yeah, exactly.
And every guy in the Guardians dugout is up on the fence cheering and yelling and waving guys home.
Yeah.
And I think a big concern that Guardians fans had in the transition from Tito to Stephen Vogt was like, all right, the culture was there. Is this going to continue on? And I think everything we're seeing is saying, like, yes. And he's got these guys bought in from all appearances. Like, they're buying what he's selling. And he hasn't been selling it that long, but they're all in, from what I can tell. Are you seeing the same thing?
And also, it's because when Jose Ramirez, your best player, runs hard on everything, that says a lot. Jose wanted Austin Hedges back. Fans hate Austin Hedges because he can't hit. And he is one of the worst-looking hitters who played in the big leagues that I've seen in a long time. But it's not just that he's a great guy around. By the way, watch him catch compared to the other catchers. They have a team. There's a dramatic difference in how he handles the pitcher. But he also has respect of those other guys. And Hedges and Jose kind of run the clubhouse and make sure that things are done well. And that helps Vogt. And so I believe that was a big factor too. And Vogt has said a couple of times that it is a culture that Tito had. So in other words, it wasn't like he came into a sloppy, lazy team that was undisciplined. He just had to make sure, as you said, they kept it going. But it'll be interesting. At some point, he's going to be tested. We'll see how he handles that. But, you know, Stephen Kwan plays hard all the time. You could just go right down the line of guys that hustle. Josh Naylor, you know, he hustles. By the way, Josh is like, he's going to like hit somebody if they keep walking him or break a bat over his leg. I mean, he's not taking this like a man at all, but he's getting walked.
It could be Stephen Vogt's biggest challenge is like how to get Josh Naylor to not steal bases in weird situations.
Yeah, that's
because he just wants to go. Right. And like,
he's mad about being walked, so then he wants to steal a base. You know, the hockey player. Have watched his growth as a hitter. Remember 2 years ago, he could not hit a lefty to save his life. He was bailing out on everything. Now he's really learned how to keep his weight back, and he's hitting everybody. And I'm really excited about how Jimenez is swinging the bat too. I know he's not hitting home runs, but doubles, and he just looks very comfortable up there. I'd be interested to see how Rocchio plays over the long term. And all right, here's one I was sleeping on. Gabriel Arias. Did you see that coming?
I did not. I don't know that anybody did.
No. And you know, he had a home run off a lefty the other day, which was almost reason enough to stop the game and get the ball out and have him sign. Remember last year, I think he hit like 098 against lefties. That's not an exaggeration. This was right around there. So that's been good. And cause he's very athletic and that would help. So I wondered a little bit when they decided to keep both Rocchio and Arias, but you know, they're using him in. And of course, Vogt's hot right now with his pinch hitters, back-to-back days, and the pinch hitters hitting home runs are Florio and Brennan. So everybody knew they would do that.
Yeah, they get put in the guy who's batting a .135 or whatever to pinch hit, and he comes through. It's like everything seems to be working, which is pretty impressive. It is early, but hey, I wanted to go back to Andrés Giménez for a second, Terry. And it seems like he's been here for 10 years already. He's 23, right?
Yeah.
And it got me thinking. All right, last year was a little bit of an off year, and he's back this year batting, I think, .310 after today. An 813 OPS. With him being so young, he's already won 2 gold gloves, a platinum glove. I'm trying to project, like, I don't want to start building statues for the guy right now.
Yeah.
But we're looking at a player here who could go down as maybe, if not one of, he could be the best second baseman this franchise has had in like 100 years, right? Like, how would you frame what you're seeing from him and how it can project for the next 5-8 years in terms of where he might be when that time period is done?
Okay. He's 25. So he's a little older than you think.
Okay.
Okay.
That's why he seems like he's been here 10 years.
Yeah. But no, he had just because it's like there now the Robbie Alomar, he had 3 years here, and I'm looking it up as we talk. And it is one of the more remarkable stints that a player has had here. And I'm just – so it's going to take a while. But I will say this. I think that in 3 years here, he hit .323 with an OPS of .920.
Which is pretty amazing. But I'm – he's a guy
stick
who
with, – stick with me.
Yeah.
And – he averaged 21 home runs. He averaged 103 RBIs, and he averaged 35 stolen bases.
Yes, but he's a guy who played some great baseball many sure. years other places and wasn't here that long, right?
No.
What were the years? It was three seasons?
Three seasons, yeah.
Three seasons.
Well, what I meant is when he there, but now I'm going to go this far, and it's hard to go there, but I will. Andres is better at second than Alomar, and here's why. He has a better arm. Now, Alomar also, as you mentioned, now he was a little older when he was here, so he didn't quite – he still was Gold Glove caliber. But Andres, it may be the best second baseman I've ever seen. And I'm trying to remember, like, you know, Bill Mazeroski or something from when I was a kid, but I just didn't see enough. So I just think he is phenomenal because of his ability to – make those plays where he's on the ground and his throws are so accurate and he gets up and just, this is the thing, like Terry Francona was always against moving him to shortstop once he saw him at second, because he just thought he was so extraordinary at second base. And that will be the thing that will happen if, you know, Juan Brito was early on, but he's the big, you know, big prospect there. If he were to start to really hit at Columbus and they bring him up, because he's not, he's played short, but you don't want to do that. Would you move him over? But for right now, defensively, he's the best I've ever seen in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you mentioned Alomar. The other guy that kind of crossed my mind, and I never really saw him play, but Joe Gordon had like a lot of his great years with the Yankees. I think he played here for four seasons
in
Cleveland, but he was an all-star and – I think he won an MVP, but like he didn't spend most of his career in Cleveland. No,
he was good, but not great. But what he really was is a power hitting second baseman, which was very unique at the time. So that was, then also if my mind is correct, and it's always dangerous, he also later managed the team and then was traded to the Tigers by Frank Lane for, I forget, Jimmy Dykes or somebody like that. It's like, what? And the story is, and I believe it's correct, that in the middle of a game, Frank Lane, who traded everybody and just about, and he's watching and his team is getting beat, and he notices the Tigers are having a hard time. And so he calls his counterpart with the Tigers, who I forgot at that time was. In 1960, he was involved in the only manager-for-manager trade, swapped with Jimmy Dykes, so that was right. And he finished the season managing the Tigers and signed on to manage the Athletics in 61. So,
classic.
But it's like, it was almost like now the, you know, like a talk show. I'm sick of my guy. You're sick of your guy. Let's just trade him.
Imagine if that happened now, how crazy that would be. Like, that would never happen now.
No. It just there were no other players involved. It's like, I'm sick of my manager. You're sick of your manager. Let's just do it.
Oof. All right. Well, anyway, yeah, so Joe, and then, the other guy I was going to mention is Carlos Baerga, Terry. He seems like he's the second baseman that most fans think of that was here for an extended period of time. I think Baerga was seven seasons, maybe 96.
Yeah, okay. The couple of years where he really hit. Defensively, I'll just be very kind and say he was very glad. He should have been very glad to have Omar Vizquel playing next to him, because Omar made up for a lot of ground and a lot of mistakes. Now, Jimenez is Venezuelan, so is Omar. And you see some Omar in him, like these kind of over-the-shoulder catches on pop-ups and a little bit of flair. And he grew up idolizing Omar, as did Rocchio, who's also Venezuelan. So that's that's kind of a fun part of the side story to this.
Yeah, and again, we're not building statues for anybody here, but no. I'm just trying to think, like, in several years, will we be talking about Jimenez as one of the great second basemen? Baerga, let's see, Baerga had three All-Star appearances.
Yep.
Three All-Star appearances, two Silver Sluggers. And his batting average for his career was .291. His OPS was .754. So we're not saying that Jimenez's .310 and .813 OPS is going to be his career averages or anything like that. But I think we're on the cusp of, like, if he continues this kind of production that we're seeing right now for several years, I think he's going to be in the discussion for some of the best ever.
And Carlos will tell you, too, is he had that early success here and whatever. He let it go to, you know, his head.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. And he got heavy. And if you look, he kind of dropped off the ledge there. And then he got himself back into shape, straightened out, spiritually grew quite a bit, and lasted a long time as a utility infielder. But early on, I mean, he had like 1 year that was like he broke a Roger Hornsby record or something for second base, and I forgot what he did. But it was pretty phenomenal there. I mean, that was a trade of Joe Carter to the Padres for Carlos Baerga and Sandy Alomar Jr. So that was one made by Hank Peters that got the I think it was 1989 or 90. That got the team on the way. Started to get the key players in here that built that powerhouse of the 90s. But it's a shame, and Carlos knows that too, that he wasn't more serious with his conditioning, because he was always kind of squat anyway, and he got too heavy.
Wow, very interesting. I didn't know that about him. And So
great guy, just a super guy.
Oh, and he's still very active with the organization.
He loves Cleveland baseball. They could get him in here for anything, you know, and it's wonderful for that. And on top of it, you know, he's really close with a lot of Latino players. He talks to Jose a lot and several others.
All right, Terry. Well, to wrap up the Guardians here, I know you've been getting some questions about outfielders and the team's search for outfielders who can produce offensively. Yeah. And there's kind of this myth out there that the Guardians don't draft outfielders, and you've kind of been exploring that a little bit. Why don't you talk about what you've been discovering?
Well, I'm hearing, they have the number one pick in the draft. They'll probably take a middle infielder again. All right. I think in the last 11 years, I looked it up. Well, Chase DeLauder was an outfielder. He was a first-round pick. And then you go with Will Benson was a first-round pick. And Bradley Zimmer, Tyler Naquin, and I'll think of it for a moment. He ended up being traded to the Yankees. Clint Frazier, yes. And so those are five right there. And they also, late first round, took Nolan Jones. It was like the supplementary pick, who was more of a third baseman at the time. So they tried. They just didn't nail it. In fact, they had three consecutive picks of Frazier, Naquin, and Zimmer. They set out to try and find outfielders. Yes, all those guys got to the majors, but none of them really were able to take hold of anything. So, because I mentioned this is, you know, the number one pick in the draft, and there's this kid for Georgia who plays the outfield and first base, Condon, who's hitting his OPS of 1,700. And he's like walked more than he struck out. Tom Hamilton is a big college baseball fan. He watches these games. And I had heard that there's this kid at Georgia, but Tom had watched him play recently, mentioned me, he goes, you got to see him play. Got to, you know, look at some YouTube for Condon. And he's a story too, this Condon guy. Scott Strickland was the coach at Georgia, and he also had coached at Kent State. In fact, he coached Tom's kids.
Right, when they made the College World Series.
And all that. Yeah. Well, he convinces this Condon to walk on, a preferred walk-on, and now he's like going to be, if he's not the number one pick in the draft, he's going to be like the top three. I think they gave him a scholarship fairly quick. But still, it's and I believe he's right from Marietta, Georgia, or somewhere within the state, so it wasn't far. It's fascinating how that happens to me. You know, you get a lot of that in baseball. I think they only have something like 11 scholarships or 10 and a half that they chop up among the players. You know, it's not like football where you have 85 or basketball where I think you have 13. Baseball and some of these other sports, They aren't that many. And so a lot of the guys, you try to combine academic aid with Pell Grants or need with a quarter scholarships or whatever. So that's why sometimes these really good players end up walking on and say, well, you know, if you prove yourself, we'll give you a quarter or we'll give you a half a grant or something like that.
Well, I'm wondering if he's on a full ride. He must be. And it's Charlie Condon is the guy you're talking about. And
Condon, yeah.
He'll be up there. So, all right, Terry. Hey, let's take a break here. When we come back, we are going to talk about Nick Chubb's contract. And I also want to tell you about the hottest position in the NFL. I'm guessing you can guess what it is, but in terms of who's getting paid these days, the hottest position in the NFL. We'll get into that and more when we come back on Terry's Talking.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, we're back on Terry's Talking. David Campbell and Terry Pluto. Hey, before I forget, I want to give out our email address. We've been collecting foul ball stories. If you have a story about catching a foul ball, or if you have a question or comment, or you want to tell us who you're not sleeping on, send it to sports@cleveland.com. Sports@cleveland.com. We'll try and get it on next week's podcast. So, all right, Terry, over the weekend, you kind of got deep into Nick Chubb's contract. It's very unusual to see this kind of thing in the cutthroat world of the NFL, but the Browns really have done right by Nick Chubb. Why don't you talk about what you've learned through some of your reporting?
I mean, I got some emails. Well, they just should have given him the $15 million that he was owed. It was a third year of a three-year, I think, $38 million contract or something like that. But the thing to remember about these contracts is rarely, other than Deshaun Watson, are they fully guaranteed if they're multi-year? Usually, if it's more than 2 years, that third or even the fourth year are not guaranteed, sometimes not guaranteed at all. In Chubb's case, he was guaranteed $0. They could have cut him, and then there's this thing called cap money. It gets a little bit in the financial minutiae, but basically, they could have paid him nothing, and just taken a hit of $4 million on the cap, and have a good life, you know. So they went to work on how to do this. So I was told there's the contract is basically a $6 million base with some bunch of incentives that could take them up to $12 million. There's a thing called $2 million for injury, but I thought that was the guaranteed $2 million, but I was told it was more than that. That it's basically somewhere probably around $4 or $5 million that they're guaranteeing them, knowing full well that it's a long shot that he would be able to play come opening day or maybe even the first third or half of the season. And what they wanted to do, see, had Nick gone to another team, he doesn't have any goodwill in the bank. And he might have just got like that $2 million for injury guarantee, and that's it, with a bunch of incentives. And what, he would have been facing a lot of internal pressure to go and come back too fast. This takes that off the table. So when Andrew Berry said, we don't want Nick Chubb's last game to be carted off the field in Pittsburgh, and we want to go with, basically they're saying, and I was told by top organization, they wouldn't do it for anybody but Nick Chubb, because the running back is considered a disposable position. And the guy, he didn't just have, remember, one. He's had two knee surgeries within 3 months, and they are about as big time as they get, the MCL and the ACL. And on top of it, it was back in 2015 when they kind of rebuilt the same knee it when he's at Georgia. So in terms of medically, this is high risk. In terms of what you do, is like if I'm going to bet on anybody, just like the Browns, you bet on Nick Chubb. And you're hoping, hey, if we get him back in, you know, game 9 and 10 and get him going, and then if he really holds up, then you could work on renegotiating that thing into a two-year or whatnot. There's a lot of good stuff. There's no downside to this.
Yeah, it makes me think of two things, Terry. One is about Nick Chubb. I mean, when Andrew Berry says, you know, coming in to this before the injury and everything, my respect for Nick Chubb was at a 10. And now my respect for Nick Chubb is at a 20 after seeing what he's – so, like, that tells you how the Browns feel about Nick Chubb. And the other thing that this makes me think of is, man, 10, 12, 15 years ago, the Browns' reputation around the league was dirt.
Yep.
Like, right, nobody wanted to come here because things were a mess and they, you know, they don't win. It's a terribly run organization. When people around the league, players and agents, see what they did for Nick Chubb, I mean, the Browns have already improved their reputation. It's been a 180. They have flipped their reputation on its head. They've gone, I think, to being one of the more respected organizations in the NFL by players and agents now in terms of how they treat players. You know, Cade York came, I'm not saying Cade York came back because of this, but like guys will come back here. They're not taking what the free agent bonus. So with the Cleveland bonus, they used to call it where guys would get $5 million extra to come and play here because nobody wanted to play here.
It was, I wish I had thought of it myself with somebody else, the Cleveland tariff.
That's what it was.
You had to play tariff. A tariff. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, if you're going to import this from China, you got to pay a tariff on it. So you're correct. And I didn't see it. I can't remember from this past year, but the Athletic for a while would run a thing of pool of agents and like best to work with, most respected, or ones you least respect. And Barry's been the top three, I think, just about every year on that. And some of the other guys, it wasn't like, oh, they just give you all the money. They were just guys that they felt probably like Barry told Chubb's agent, I really want to get something done. Let's work on this. I'm not going to just give you the $15 million, you know, and we're going to, or even hold you to that and then cut you for zero. We're going to find something in between that works. So we will, we'll see. And then of course, you know, I always put an asterisk to everything when it comes to Deshaun Watson, because even if Deshaun Watson wasn't the initial idea of ownership, that was such a big deal with so many different, not only financially, but so many different public relations things and all that, that it is an ownership decision. And something clearly happened between when Deshaun Watson's people dumped out on Cleveland and then within 36 hours, Barry's back on the phone, basically giving Watson everything he wants. So, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, and you talked the Watson contract, the Chubb contract, Miles Garrett, all these guys they've been paying. Like, you know how it works in the NFL, Terry. You kick the can down the road, and then you try to avoid becoming the Saints, right? And I know we mentioned overthecap.com a lot on this podcast, but the Browns have the 27th least. Well, there's a list of who has the most to least salary cap. The Browns are at the bottom. They're 27th for salary cap available money for this season coming up. They're 30th in 20 and 25. They're last in 2026 in terms of how much money they have to spend. And then they're 29th in 2027. So there's going to be some tough decisions. And they've already got this all mapped out, like Paul DePodesta and Andrew Berry and that whole front office. They've got like a 5-year, 10-year plan where when these guys that are on the current team start to get 30, 32, 33, that's when you get your draft picks back and start drafting young guys, so and cheap, young, cheap guys. But this is going to come home to roost pretty soon here, and they're going to have to negotiate it.
Now, a kind word about the Haslams is when they redo a lot of these contracts and they turn that into signing bonuses paid up front, a lot of owners don't like to do that. And then they're able to create these void years. And I don't even fully understand exactly how this is done. But when you take a guy's salary, convert it to a signing bonus, it buys you kind of more time. Eventually, it catches you. But also buying yourself more time is counting on how these television revenues keep increasing. So therefore, the cap keeps going up. The cap went up more this year than was originally projected a year ago. So that helps. The thing to watch is this, David. Will they rework Deshaun's or not? And here's why I say this. Because, all right, so this would be year three of the five-year, you know, $230 million deal. And so then it's like if he doesn't play well, you may not want to have that thing, those void years of $30 million and, you know, 2029 or whatever, because you eventually got to deal with all that stuff. So remember, when we talk about this, all these owners are loaded. They make so much money in the NFL. So when they say they don't have the money, it means they don't have the money on the cap, or you didn't handle your cap right, or you paid the wrong guys. So we'll see how that goes. But as you said, I think I give Andrew Berry and company credit for navigating this thing with having traded all these assets for Watson. And all they've gotten out of them in 2 years is 12 games.
Yeah, big season ahead in 2024 for a number of reasons, a lot of what you were just talking about, Terry. So, all right, so we're talking about running back salaries, all right? I wanted to read you the top – let's do the top three. The top three paid running backs going into the season with the biggest contracts. Christian McCaffrey of the
49ers. That would have been my guess, yeah.
Right. His total value is $64 million for his deal, and the average guarantee per year, 7.5.
How about that?
Okay. Alvin Kamara of the Saints, his total value is $75 million, and his average guarantee per year is 3.5. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, if you're doing McCaffrey, Kamara, and Taylor, their average salary per year, 16.0, 15.0, 14.0. That's McCaffrey, Kamara, Taylor.
With a bunch of ways to get out of a lot of that, too.
Right. Yeah, the guarantee goes way down. Like I said, 7.5, 3.5, and 6.4.
And also, Baltimore just signed
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, and I had it 2 years, $16 million, $9 million guaranteed.
$9 million guaranteed, which comes out to $4.5 million guaranteed per year.
Think about this. My guess is when we ever we see the guarantee on Chubb, I bet it rolls in very close to that 4.5 or whatever that Henry got. I really think it will.
I think you're right. But now I want you to listen, and this is why I say this is the hottest position. I don't mean the most expensive. I just mean the one where the graph line is going straight up like a hockey stick.
All right, let me guess.
Go ahead. Chris, well, I'm going to give it away.
Defensive back.
Defensive line. Check this out. Chris Jones from the Chiefs has just signed a huge deal. It's $158.7 million. His average guarantee per year, $12 million. Mm-hmm. Number two, Aaron Donald of the Rams, $95 million is his total value. His guarantee average per year, $15.5 million. Christian Wilkins of the Raiders, huge deal, $110 million. 14.375 million is the average. So if you take the top three, McCaffrey, his average guarantee per year, 7.5 compared to Chris Jones at 12. Alvin Kamara, 3.5 guaranteed per year. Aaron Donald, 15.5 million guaranteed per year. Number three, Jonathan Taylor, running back, 6.4 guaranteed per year. Christian Wilkins, defensive lineman, 14.375 million.
And that's why when you look at these contracts, like 5 years for 75 million, when you really break them down, they're like 3 years, you know, at 12 million a year or something like that. Then you could get out of them, you know, 75 million gross and 36 million guaranteed. And that's
Did you ever see a day though, Terry? Would you ever have foreseen a day where defensive linemen are getting that?
Hang with me.
Yeah.
On the defensive line, you were seeing more. They're not fully guaranteed, but even if you break it down like I just did, they're still richer. You know, that first 2 or 3 years of the contract that are really basically guaranteed, they're a lot more expensive. Now, to your point, defensive tackles, really?
It's like the new glamour position or something.
Yeah, I mean, defensive ends, we got it. Because remember, it used to be I remember Joe Banner, when he was here, gave me a quickie. He was one of the early analytics guys. And he gave me a real quickie thing on why you pay tackles and why you pay defensive ends and pass rushers, because, you know, he thought their numbers were showing that the big thing is pressuring the quarterback, protecting the quarterback. Who does a better job pressuring on defense does better. Who does a better job protecting on offense does better. So put your money there. And the idea back then was in the middle of the lines, offensive and defensive, it wasn't as important to spend that much, that you could get big fat guys to get in the way. That's where, now how that's all changed.
It's wild. I never would have thought that you'd be seeing defensive tackles get making twice, basically, in a lot of situations, what the star running backs are making. Mm-hmm. And I guess it goes back to what you're saying, Terry. If you sack the quarterback and strip the ball, those are game-changing plays. And just like Joe Banner's theory, right?
And also Banner said, I remember on running backs, he said, he goes, your linemen a lot of times, well, especially offensive linemen, he said, will play a lot longer than your running backs, and they do. Because they could play with those knees that are surgically repaired and everything else. You know, a guy loses a step or two. And we've seen these guys have 1,000-yard seasons their first couple of years, and then suddenly they just have no burst. So, but it is fascinating, the defensive tackles. I never saw that. Now, Andrew Berry, if you've noticed, he'll pay for offensive guards. He pays big money for his guards. Batonio. And some of these others he's had for
saying Wyatt Teller, yep.
Yeah, the whole thing. Posick's got a nice contract. And Sashi Brown learned the hard way on that. And he told me this. Remember, he lowballed Mitchell Schwartz. And then they turn around. Oh, no, I hate when I walk down the road and I forgot where I want to go. But the following year, they signed a guard who's now with the Ravens. And they also signed a center who's now the head of the Players Association. And that is terrible that there. He signed them for far more money than he ever would have signed Mitchell Schwartz for. And he admitted to me one time, he said, I blew it. And I should have. We'll have those guys within about 2 minutes.
Oh, and Alex Mack, was Alex Mack one of them?
No, that was after Alex Mack left.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, because but we'll get that. Go on to something else, but I'll have it in a moment.
Okay. All right. I think that's it for Brown stuff, so we can move on.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. We're getting close to dinner time, Terry, and it's making me think I need to get a promo in here real quick to our Dine, Drink, Klee podcast. Check it out if you love Cleveland and you love Cleveland food and you love Cleveland restaurants. It's a new podcast, just started a few months ago, about dining and drinking in Greater Cleveland. Dine, Drink, Klee, Josh Duke and Alex Darris. They have a lot of social media clips they're doing too. You can kind of see what they're talking about in a given week. They talk about new restaurants, trends. They're going to be talking about patios and where you can eat in the summer. So check it out anywhere you see podcasts. Dine, Drink, Klee. Check it out. Here we go, Terry. We have a letter here from a fan, and we have two foul ball stories. You ready for these?
We're ready.
Let's get into it. This one comes from Dennis Jankowski, and Dennis says, hey, Terry and David, greetings from Sparkle City, South Carolina. Terry, have you ever been to Sparkle City, South Carolina? I've never
heard of it. No, and I live in North Carolina, so I'm familiar with some of those things, but it's not Sparkle City.
Sounds like a lovely place. He says, my name is Dennis Jankowski, born in Parma near Terry's home.
Okay.
And a lifelong Cleveland sports fan dating back to 1959 when the Cleveland Indians finished second to the Go-Go White Sox with Nelly Fox and Louis Aparicio. We were just talking about the Go-Go Guardians last week. That's so funny. And Dennis says, I followed the Guardians, Indians, Browns, Cavs, and Ohio State through my many moves across the country and overseas with the U.S. Army. My affinity for Cleveland sports runs deep in our family history. My dad knew a great Cleveland baseball player named Joe Vosmick talked about him with athletic respect. My sister went on a date with Rocky Colavito and never realized he was a professional ball player.
What did they talk about?
Next time you talk to him, you'll have to ask him.
Rocky,
about it. Yeah.
Wow.
If you ever went on a
date,
he's
been married forever. Of course, now I'm just wandering off into some really bad areas and not remembering anything. But so that was this. That's what Joe Vosmick. I believe Vosmick was originally from Cleveland. Not just played here, but I think he was a Cleveland guy. And the reason I remember that is, when I was researching my book, Our Tribe, this is incredible. They had his home address in the paper. They would they would do that back then. They would say, oh, you know, Tris Speaker lives on, you know, on East Boulevard at 12. You know, it's like you would never do. And I guess it didn't matter. It was just
that was just common. Yeah,
Ray Mack was a guy that was from Cleveland, and I remember running into his address there. And my father knew Ray Mack, so it was one of the – J.C. Treader was the center that they signed back then. And Kevin Zeitler was the guard. How's that?
Who's had a long and storied career.
The internet. So, and, yeah, Zeitler's made a ton of money. And Treader, you know, he played on one knee here for quite a while. And now he's in charge of the union. But to go back to your point that you see that – that were Andrew Berry picked up on, it's like, wait a minute, we should spend on these guys on the line, whether they're guard, centers, or tackles.
All right.
Okay, there we go. I feel better now.
Oh, you'll be able to sleep tonight after getting closure on that. So. Yeah. All right, back to Dennis Jankowski. He says his sister went on a date with Rocky. My older brothers were ushers at Municipal Stadium for the great 1948 Indians team, and they were nice to me just once when they took me to see the Browns beat the Colts for the NFL championship. I just want to say I sincerely appreciate how you guys cover Cleveland sports and the fellow Cleveland sports writers and broadcasters who have done likewise these many years. Your insight is refreshing, and the human interest backstories you convey about our teams dovetail with my family's old history. Thanks for being such stand-up guys. I look forward to your next 100 podcasts. Again, this is from when we asked for letters back for 100 podcasts. Good fortune to you and our Cleveland teams in 2024. Again, that's from Dennis Jankowski. Thanks for that. So, Terry, you're going to get the scoop on that when you talk to Rocky next time.
Yes.
Right? All right. All right. Back to foul ball stories. Here we go. And this comes from about a month ago. Terry asked fans to write in foul ball stories, stories of you catching a ball at a game. Again, you can send those to sports@cleveland.com. This one is from Bill Martin in Worthington, Ohio. And Bill says, in the late 1950s, I was sitting in the upper deck watching the Indians play. Eddie Yost of the Senators was at bat. Facing, my memory says, was Mike Garcia. A foul ball came my way in the first row along the first base side. Using my little league trained skillful hands that I trained in Barberton, I caught it with no glove.
Wow.
A business attired man sitting in front of me, he might have been in a photo box, turned around and said, nice catch, young man. Who was the guy? Hank Greenberg.
Ha! Huh.
As an 83-year-old who just moved naturally, I have taken the ball with me to my new retirement home. P.S. My dad took me to the 1948 World Series versus the Boston Braves, Gromick versus Sane.
Wow.
Seats upper deck way up in left field. So anyway, he had a brush with Hank Greenberg after he caught a foul ball. So
all right, here we go. Eddie Yost had a nickname. Do you know what it was?
I do not.
No reason to know. The Walking Man. Mike Garcia had a nickname. The Big Bear. And he, for years, he owned Big Bear Cleaners. I believe it was on the West Side, but don't hold me to. But I know that after he retired, you could wander in there, and he'd be in there kind of helping with the clothes and running the cash register.
Man, all these baseball players with their side jobs in the off season back in the day. Yeah, yep. All right, here is our last letter. This one is from Terry Armstrong, and he's from Warren, Ohio. He says, greetings. I love the podcast, Terry's books and columns. I'm a longtime Cleveland sports fan from Warren. Many of my Steeler fan friends asked when my daughter was born, why would you bring her up to be a Cleveland sports fan? In addition to it being a family and loyalty thing for me, I also shared that it prepares you for disappointments in life.
That's right. Preach it.
My story is having never gotten a foul ball of any kind at a game in my 53 years. I got to the park early with a friend, a Red Sox fan, as we were playing Boston that night. Batting practice was going on, and we were hanging out in the right field area when a ball was coming towards us, and it bounced off a seat right into my hands. While excited to get the ball, I immediately looked around, and all of the kids who were up front lining the first row were up there waiting for a souvenir. Many were in their Red Sox shirts, and thus I looked until I saw a kid in a Cleveland uniform, and I walked up and handed it to him. Big smile and a handshake from his dad was a highlight of going to games for me. A quick item.
Very classy.
Yeah, nice move. Huh?
Very classy,
And he continues to write, Terry does. He says, a quick item I would like to share. My name is Terry, and I've been accused of being a talker. When I told my wife your podcast is called Terry's Talking, she said mine could be Terry's Still Talking.
Well, it's like, you know, it's, the people that write me now and then, isn't it way beyond time when you stopped talking and started retiring?
And he says, keep up the great work. And he hopes to see you at a library at some point, Terry.
Okay. So,
all right. Well, thanks for that one. And again, if you want to send any of those to us, it's sports@cleveland.com. We're going to move to the book of the week segment here, Terry. You got a letter from longtime listener Chuck Laughlin from Mentor, and he said, hey, Terry, I wanted to thank you for your recommendation a few weeks ago of the author Robert Whitlow. I recently read and immensely enjoyed reading his series of three books, Deeper Water, Higher Hope, and Greater Love. Thanks for your podcast. I look forward each week to hear you and Dave discuss sports. I never miss an episode. Thanks, Chuck, for being a loyal listener. Terry, you've gotten some response.
Yeah. I love Whitwell. He's sort of another kind of John Grisham type. And he said a couple of his things made into like TV movies. One was called Jimmy, and I think another was called The List. And really, Whitwell, look him up. And he's an attorney. He lives in Charlotte now, but I think he grew up in rural Georgia. So he writes a lot of stuff set in the South. And if you like Grisham, I think you'll like Whitwell. And other thing, too, nice about it is you don't have to worry about, you know, there's not a lot of overt sex or not a lot of big profanity all over the place, but compelling stories, well written. And sometimes when the lawyers write these books, they almost get into too much legal minutia. He knows how to walk that line between, oh, that's very interesting legally, without getting you lost in the, you know, the 14th of subpoena and the 13th court delay.
That's a tough area to find, isn't it? Getting it being interesting and not too complicated. So,
yeah.
All right. I think we're done here, Terry, right?
I think of all the podcasts we've ever done.
This is the most recent.
This is the first one you've ever done from a library.
It is. Yeah. The internet went out of my house. So I came down to the library and
this shows the dedication to keep that podcast going.
That's right. That's right. Hey, speaking of dedication, Terry's newsletter comes out every week, and we're going to be making some changes to the newsletter that we'll tell you about very soon. But go make sure you sign up for that. You can go to cleveland.com/newsletters and just click on the box, put in your email. It takes about a minute. We're going to, like I said, we'll have some announcements on that coming soon. Next week, we'll have playoffs and lots of other stuff to talk about. I think that's it, Terry, right?
That is it.
All right. We'll see everybody next week on Terry's Still Talking. Take care. Have a good week.